show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. It's still a quiet off season as we continue to move along. We talked about it last show. I think this is the new norm for baseball now in the off season, at least until we get a new CBA. But that's a little ways down the road. So we'll jump right in to just kind of what has been going on. But right before we get to that, of course, introductions. I am Jeff Fern. With me, as always, is the man who's never quiet and never needs to be, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this frigid winter awfulness of an evening?
Yeah, this weather sucks. And it wasn't even like that. I mean, it was cold, but it wasn't terribly cold. But it's just dreary and bleak and gray and wet and gross and
so I was.
No thanks.
Story time.
All right.
We're already starting. We're already just jumping right in with the story
Might
time.
As well.
So
yeah.
I was at Chiefs game this past weekend. Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah. one of the greatest Chiefs games I've ever been to, by the way. It was funny because so my parents have two season tickets, and my mom doesn't like to go to the games anymore. And so my dad was like, okay, we figured it would be fair because I have a sister who lives in Oklahoma. So he said, okay, we figured it'd be fair this week. I have another sister who lives in town. He goes, Jeff, you and my sister Marcia, who lives in town, you guys can have the tickets for this game. And then if the Chiefs win, this is my dad talking, my dad would take the ticket. And then my other sister from Oklahoma, who's coming into town, she would take the other one. So those two would get to go. She's like, that way everybody gets to go to a game. So, okay. So my sister and I, we go out there. Obviously, you know, we went out like 4 hours early, not to tailgate, but just because we were worried about the roads. And the roads were bad, but it wasn't terrible getting in. We got in relatively easily. But so obviously Chiefs win. It was cold. I couldn't feel my toes for roughly two quarters. But I feel them now. So everything's okay. And but so as we're looking towards, you know, after they win, of course, we're looking towards next week and next week's game. Well, then it's like, oh, it's supposed to be super cold, right? Single digits.
Yeah.
So
like negative wind chill.
Yes. So in 2008, the Chiefs were god awful terrible, right? And they were playing a game against the Miami Dolphins, of all teams, just because I say that because they come from a warm weather city, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it was literally the coldest game in Arrowhead Stadium history. So, of course, me being the fan that I am, I'm like, that's okay. I'll go out there, right? It was awful, terrible, horrible awfulness, so cold. And it just so happened that my dad had been at a charity fundraiser either a week or, you know, a week or two before and had won tickets to the Arrowhead Pavilion thing. I don't know if they do it anymore, but it was something that went on during the game. It was like a tent set up with like heating and stuff, and you sat there, and they had food that you could eat and everything. So it was, I don't know how much it cost, but you know, he won these tickets. So he's like, well, if it gets too cold at halftime, we can go in and we can watch, because they set up these huge projector screens. We can go in and watch the game in there. So thankfully we were able to watch the game in there in the second half. It was much more enjoyable, especially because they lost and they were terrible. So had they been better and it'd been a more important game, like, you know, say the AFC Championship game, that's
right,
a game that I probably would have stayed out in the stands
you
for.
You can get through it, yeah.
Yes. So my dad and my other sister, Melissa, will be going to that game this coming weekend, and it's supposed to be close to as cold as that was, but they won't be able to go to any sort of heated thing, not that they would anyway.
No escape.
You don't want to get out of your seats from that one. So that's my That's my winter Chiefs story, winter and I find a way to bring the Chiefs in. And interestingly enough, that game was roughly 10 years ago, December of 2008.
Huh.
And recently, there has been a I can't remember the actual hashtag being used, but kind of people have been doing a 10 years difference thing. I participated because, you know, whatever. I'm a sucker for some of these social media things. So I think you have too, Mike. I think I saw a pic from you.
I did something on Facebook, yeah.
Where you compare, you take a picture from 10 years ago and you compare it to a picture today, post them side by side, et cetera. So,
yeah, I'm a lot heavier now.
I'm a lot more bearded now.
Me too. That's why I'm heavier. That's the only reason why I'm heavier. That's nothing to do with...
Yes, the weight of the beard itself.
Really liking potato chips. Completely unrelated.
Completely unrelated, I'm sure. But so with that in mind, that's, you know, that was kind of the 10 years difference for the Chiefs. They were 2-14 in 2008, losing to the Dolphins on the coldest day ever, and now coldest game ever at Arrowhead Stadium. And now possibly the coldest game ever could be for the AFC Championship game to go to the Super Bowl. So what a difference 10 years makes. And with that, our theme for the show today is going to be timelines and changes over the years. So we have a couple interesting topics that we thought we'd look at based on just kind of news, recent news, and just general Royals. So first, we're going to talk about Kyle Zimmer. So he's a name that everyone on this show who listens to this show is familiar with, obviously. And
the great white whale.
Yes, if you will. And we he was we talked about on the last show how he was released by the Royals. We anticipated that he would get signed on a minor league deal with the team again. And of course, that's exactly what happened just a few days after we recorded that show.
It was actually a major league deal, which was surprising.
Oh, major league. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Which was correct. Kind of out of nowhere. I was like, well, okay. Guy hasn't pitched since 2017 in an official, you know, regular minor league game, but okay.
So whatever. Maybe the Royals know something we don't.
Sure.
Let's hope.
I hope so.
Now, so we thought it would be a good idea to just kind of go back over the promise and heartbreak that has been the career of Kyle Zimmer up to this point. So if you remember, we were doing the 1510 show, I think, when he was drafted, right?
Yeah, we would have been. That would have been right
so
in the middle of it.
I think we talked about that about him being drafted on that show. So one of those shows.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been June, and we did that show from May until August, I want to say. Sounds right? Something like that? I don't know.
Sounds right. Because he was the last of the top five, you know, kind of really high picks, wasn't he? So how high was their 2013 pick?
In 2013, who did they take in 2013? Having trouble remembering now. Clearly they did well. 2011 was Bubba.
was it
Zimmer? 2013 would have been, it's terrible that I can't remember this off the top of my head. 2014 was Finnegan. That doesn't help.
2014 was Finnegan. 2015 was Ash Russell?
Yeah.
So, God, who was 2013?
Who did they take in 2013? I don't remember. And now we got to look it up and remember.
Now we got to spend the time.
It's totally silly.
To look it up.
But yeah, it would have been in June of 2012. They would have selected Kyle Zimmer, fifth overall. Out of University of San Francisco.
Oh, that was Sean Manaea.
Oh,
that was, or not Sean
Dozier
Manaea,
and Manaea.
Sean Manaea. So they had one of those, and that was the eighth overall pick. 2013. Okay, now we got it. Okay.
Sorry, Hunter Dozier.
So, sorry, but yeah. And then, of course, in 2013, they had, they started to actually play good baseball, and so they've had lower draft picks. So now they're back in the fold. Now they'll have the number two draft pick in the coming year. So that'll be fun. But We'll talk. We've got plenty of time to talk about that later. Right now, we're talking about Kyle Zimmer, who was the number 5 overall pick in 2012. He was a two-way player in college at the University of San Francisco. Yep.
He was a Don.
And yes, he was. And so the thought with him, and he kind of came into pitching a little bit later. And so the thought with him was that, okay, he doesn't have the wear and tear on the arm. He's got the athleticism from being an infielder. And, you know, he's a guy who the fact that he has as much pitching talent as he does and the idea that he can likely be a little bit more durable because of that type of training that he's gone through is going to make him a really reliable, very talented pitcher.
Felt
for the
like
Royals.
Huge
there
upside.
Was a small little yes, because he still had more room to grow as a pitcher, but then didn't have the miles on him and didn't, you know, had that, like I said, that athleticism. That was the big thing that everyone talked about. And there was a small kind of known issue for loose bodies, if you will, that were not if you will, that's what they were called, but in his pitching elbow. And so it was known before he was drafted. The Royals knew about it. And so as soon as he was drafted, you know, boom, they got him right into a little bit, you know, a month later or so. They got him in to get surgery to have those removed. And then he would be on track to, you know, be ready for sometime in the 20 at the end of the 2012 season and then hit it strong in 2013.
Yep, that's the plan.
So
that's the plan.
That kind of went as planned. Yeah, that was the plan. For how it first went. And then why don't you go ahead and talk about what happened in 2013.
Well, 2013, you know, he goes through and he's doing okay. But, you know, by the end of the year, he starts to have shoulder issues. And, you know, towards the middle of August, he was basically shut down. You know, it was one of those where precautionary or not, the Royals decided, okay, well, we're at the tail end of the minor league season. We're not going to worry too much about it. You know, considering that Kyle Zimmer, 2013 is a pretty successful year for him. You know, really pitched pretty well, even going as high as Northwest Arkansas and had a few good starts there. But yeah, by the end of the year, ran into those shoulder issues. And, you know, you want to think they're minor, but. It's Kyle Zimmer's story. That's not how this goes.
Yes.
So, yeah.
No.
You know, that was kind of just the start of things. But again, there wasn't anything, you know, on the surface that seemed too tough. And came into 2014. There were even some blurbs out there saying that, okay, he reached 2013 season, he reached double A. Maybe he pitches in AAA. Maybe he's pitching in the bullpen for the Royals in 2014 when they have playoff thoughts, and that mm-hmm. that didn't work either.
Spoiler alert.
By May, by the end of May, missed some time again with a lat strain. So now we've got elbow, shoulder, lat. This thing's just traveling around his body at this stage. And as it comes around by the end of the year in October, he ends up needing surgery on his labrum in his shoulder and on his rotator cuff, which is
kind of
a great place to end up at. You don't really want to be rooting around in that shoulder, especially rotator cuff. And so that was kind of it. But again, optimism. You know, maybe he can come back. Maybe he can get things together. And, so 2015, the Royals defending AL champs. Kyle Zimmer still kind of disappointing. And just right away in May, starts coming back, has a setback. End of May, you know, he does return. And by July, he was in double A and kind of finished with, you know, relatively few issues. You know, pitched pretty well.
Relative
being
the key word here.
You know, didn't really have too big of a problem. And they added him to the 40-man roster in November, because he was due to be available for the Rule 5 draft, so they wanted to protect him. The idea was that he was going to contribute in 2016. Defending world champs, now you get Kyle Zimmer, now he's going to contribute.
Let's do a repeat.
Yeah, here we go. And I think that was the year that, like, he ended up starting a couple of games in spring training in 2016. And you ended up seeing he would start. He'd pitch one inning and get about 15 pitches in, and he was in, like, the 90s, you know, like 94, 95, kind of about where you usually expected, about where he was drafted. And then he would sit down, and he would start his second inning, and he's, like, high 80s. It's like, okay. And then, like, they're like, oh, he's fine, whatever. He's getting into, you know, it's early, he's getting into it.
Spring training.
Yeah. And then the next start, it would be, like, in the middle of the inning, he loses the velocity. And so he didn't make it out of camp. He didn't, you know, he stayed in extended spring training.
I remember having lots of discussions in the Slack chat about that, of just how weird it was and how it obviously meant something
was
not
right. Just like that, you know, in a blink. Oh, he just doesn't throw anymore. You know, he goes from being a top five overall pick to being a decent high school arm, velocity wise. And so he stayed in extended spring training and, you know, never really got anything going. He pitched, you know, about what, 5 2/3 innings in 2016, made 3 whole appearances.
Seems a little high, but yeah, I think that's about right.
I mean, by July was shut down and ended up having thoracic outlet syndrome surgery, which was, you know, that's, we've seen some players who can do stuff with that, like Chris Young was able to come back from that and at least be productive later in his career. And then we've seen pitchers, Matt Harvey, another one who did it.
Where's the flip side?
Luke Hochaver, who never got it back, came back from it. Never even negotiations, like never got back into, never signed another contract once he had that surgery. It just didn't happen. So that's kind of where Kyle Zimmer ended up at the end of 2016. And, you know, that was the Royals still believed, but, you know, he comes in and threw 36 2/3 innings in 2017. Most of those in Omaha, didn't pitch great, but, you know, got some strikeouts. But still, even in April, was pulled from a game with some shoulder soreness, went on the disabled list. And, you know, the story kind of continued where last year, when the Royals needed to make room for players, he was designated for assignment so that they could have a 40-man roster spot and, you know, went unclaimed. No one picked him up. He re-signed on a minor league deal. Didn't even pitch last year, not in a regular game. Ended up where he spent most of the year at Driveline Baseball, who we've kind of mentioned before.
It is
interesting considering where the Royals were 8 years ago on, you know, alternative pitching training methods and where they are now, because he went there at the urging of assistant general manager J.J. Piccolo. It wasn't like, oh, I've heard of them, let's do that. It was like Piccolo was like, hey, you should try it. And he spent a lot of time there. And, yeah, now he's back. Apparently feels, you know, healthy and feels no pain for the first time since he became a pro. Which is exactly what you would say after signing a major league deal to rejoin your drafting team after an injury-riddled career with them. But, I mean, the Royals, like you said, the Royals must have seen something. They must know something if they signed him to a big league deal. It is split. It's one of those it's not quite split like Terrence Gore, where he's got a really, really big bonus. It's like, you know, basically the league minimum. I'll hold on for you. Oh, where is that chat?
Oh, wait, I'm back. Cool. Sorry about that. My daughter got home. She was kept coming into the room. I had to mute the microphone, and she was being crazy. So I just had to go put her out in the living room with my wife. Hello. So I'm back. Sorry.
But the way the contract splits, it's not quite as heavy as Terrence Gore's. I think it's like $125,000 for if he's in the minor leagues, and he'd make the league minimum for his time in the big leagues. He does have an option left, so it's not like he's going to be starting day one. I think the over-under moratorium on Kyle Zimmer still has to exist this year. We can't go with the idea of calling him, you know, 25-inning guy for our bold predictions. But, you know, it does put him in a position where if he is, you know, still feeling pain-free, maybe the Royals have found something. Maybe they've lucked into you know, an actual reliever. I mean, at this point, he's 27 years old. I mean, he became a pro in, you know, 7 years ago, you know, 6.5 years ago, and hasn't reached the big leagues, hasn't reached his potential, but there's still possibly something. So, you know, the kind of story comes around to a second, third, fourth chance with the Royals, despite all the injuries.
Well, that's what talent will get you.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah. If he's good, I mean, it's like he was a 4 or 5 pitch guy when they drafted him. And
well, the crazy thing about Zimmer is, for all the kind of non-success that he's had, this isn't someone who has struggled to just be a good pitcher, you know, and we're hoping he can put it all together. It's just someone who, I mean, he hasn't thrown a pitch since 2017, and he pitched, you know, 5 2/3 innings in a year. I mean, it's just, he's a guy who the talent was always there. It's just he literally just kept getting injured, you know, just boom, 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 boom. I mean, you went through them all right after another. And so, you know, the one real season that he had, he actually did really well. And it seemed like, okay, things are on track. Let's get this done. But so he's had the talent. It's always been there, and he's even showed it. It's just he's had just, you know, the question ultimately then becomes, if someone is, you know, been a pro 6.5 years now and been injured literally every year, they're 27, are they all of a sudden going to be healthy for the rest of their career? Is it like how – is it just possible that he had a string of bad luck, or maybe there was just all these things kind of led into one another, and now just having the final thoracic outlet syndrome – surgery kind of cleared everything out, maybe? I don't know. So it's – who knows? But it's one of those things where there's a little bit more hope that he can give you a little bit of something, whether that's as a starter or reliever, just because of the fact that it hasn't been a failure of his mm-hmm. talent. It's been a failure of his body to stay healthy. So, you know, for whatever that's worth,
yeah. There it is. And, I mean, it's not like it's a recurring issue with – I mean, his shoulder, there's soreness, and I, you know, I would say that that's probably going to be a regular concern for him, mm-hmm. but it's not like someone who's on their third Tommy John surgery and it keeps blowing up. It's like, well, here's a lat thing, here's an elbow thing, here's a shoulder thing. And if he's pain-free, maybe that means his mechanics are better. Driveline is – they have a pretty strong program. There's a reason they have a good reputation for developing and helping pitchers is, mm-hmm. you know, they take on a lot of individualized instruction based on refining those mechanics. And if that's something that has led to these injuries, or that have, you know, maybe adjusted because of injuries and because of pain, if he's healthy – from just a physiological standpoint, and he's getting better mechanics with this kind of focused training, that kind of leaves a lot of that upside still there. Now, he's probably at this rate never going to be a starter consistently, even if he's healthy, just because that question's always going to be there. He's going to probably have to really, really prove that to a team, but you could get, you know, 50, 60 innings out of him in a major league bullpen, striking out 10, 11 guys per 9 innings and, you know, keeping the ball in the ballpark and on the ground and not walking a lot. That's a pretty good find for someone that, you know, you could have given up on, you know, a year, 2 years ago. pretty easily, or somebody that could have slipped through and someone else claimed and, you know, nursed him back. And, you know, it would be super painful to see Kyle Zimmer end up signing with, like, the A's and becoming, like, a shutdown closer over the next, like, 5 years.
It would that just would be bad, like, yeah.
And, you know, after this year, maybe that'll happen. Maybe he pitches well, goes out and gets a real deal. But, you know, who knows? But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of fun to at least see him back and see maybe, hey, maybe this is the year. Maybe this is the time we get to kick the football.
Despite the moratorium and despite the fact that I get annoyed that we've been burned so many times, I still want him to succeed.
I really do. Even if it was on another team, it would still be really nice for it to happen.
Yeah, because he's not a, you know, it would be a good story for him to come back and succeed. And, you know, he seems like a pretty good down-to-earth guy by all accounts. So, you know, he's an easy guy to root for and to hope he does well. And I really do. I hope he comes back and gives us a reason to put him on the over-under next year for 2020.
The one thing I'll look at if he does make it to the big leagues is Andy McCullough's mentions. Because, you know, he only covered the Royals for 2 years, but he got those prime Kyle Zimmer years with all the injuries and all the ups and downs and starts and stops and to the point that he's been covering the Dodgers for a couple of years. I don't know where he's ended up now. He was with the Dodgers, and I think he left that beat.
He did. I can't remember either.
But, you know, anyway, good writer, and every time he does any kind of Q&A or almost any comment at all, he gets a question about Kyle Zimmer.
Naturally.
It's fun. It's one of the fun things to do on the internet, so... It's a victimless fun.
Be really funny if wherever you know, whatever team he writes for, Zimmer ends up going to that team. That'd be really funny.
It's like, just can't shake him. He's always
just
there.
Just can't shake him. So anyway, you know, hopefully Kyle Zimmer can get back into to being, you know, being a contributor for the Royals, because they're going to need all the help they can get in the next couple seasons as they continue to rebuild and bridge this gap between two contending eras of Royals baseball. So, you know, all the best to him, and hopefully the Royals and him can you know, figure something out.
It'd be really nice to get something out of either he or Bubba Starling. Just anything.
God, that'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
Just make
something.
It to the big leagues.
Just league average baseball. That's all, you know, above replacement level. It's all
the standards
all
are low. Like, just get
there. Very low.
Like, just finish. I don't care what your time is in that race. Just get to the end. That's fine. That's all you got to do.
Yes. Yeah.
That's it.
So, sticking with the 10 years on angle, we're actually going to go a little bit further back. We're going to go 15 years now. We've got to just kind of a, you brought this up, Mike, as just kind of a fun topic maybe to talk about. And I agree. Think it would be fun. So, you know, we can look back 10 years and see the Royals in 2009 as a team that, you know, that was actually under Dayton Moore. Was that his best season before 2013, or was it 2008? They won 75 games. What was that? 08 or 09? I cannot remember.
I would feel like it was 08 because I think that was the year they had that really good September, and the feeling was that Butler and Gordon were going to be really good in 2009, and they went and traded for Mike Jacobs and Coco Crisp right after the World Series, in 2008.
Yes, you are correct. 75 in 2008. So 2009, it was 65.
That's
wins.
Worse.
So kind of interesting that 10 years later, they might be just about the same, but everything that happened in between is pretty monumental. So that's kind of interesting if you think about that. But like I said, we're going to go a bit further back. We're going to go back to 2004. Now, if you recall, back when we had our retrospective on 2002 –
episode
season.
Number 100.
Then
check your archives
for the first 100 loss season. which they just had another one last year. But anyway, so coming off their first 100 loss season, the Royals just came out of the gate just killing it. They had all these great wins. It was very actually sort of reminiscent to the 2015 season, where they just came out of the gate guns blazing and having all these exciting victories.
I think they had that walk-off on opening day, wasn't it? Was it like the Mendy Lopez?
Yep. Yeah. And they, yeah, it was just, so that was, it was a lot of fun. Where'd they start off? 9-0 or something like that? I mean, it was.
Well, they started out hot for sure in 2003, and then 2004, I think, was that walk-off that I mentioned. But I think they were like 9-0 and then 14-3 in 2003. And that kind of, you know, put the nosotros corremos, Jose Lima, Tony Peña.
Yep, I believe, yeah. Jose Lima time. Yep. Rest in peace. Man. So, so then, but they, you know, tried their best. Sounds so little league, but to stay relevant, and they just slowly kind of faded away, ended up finishing third in the division, 83-79, first winning season in a while though, so that was nice. And but it renewed hope, it gave hope. I remember before the 2004 season, lots of prognosticators, you know, on ESPN, SportsCenter, all that kind of stuff, Baseball Tonight, that are talking, you know, doing their preseason predictions. A lot of people were predicting the Royals to win the Central in 2004, which might have been more of an indictment on Central at the time than it was anything with the Royals. But regardless, you know, there was a lot of positive energy around the Royals for that year, and so the Royals were like, okay, we're going to make some moves. We're going to take a run at this thing. And so they go out, and one of their big signings was Juan Gonzalez, who he was a little bit older at the time, but, you know, former league MVP, former All-Star. Just one of those guys who he came to the plate and he scared every single team that he was up against.
Yeah.
You know, multiple seasons of 40 plus home runs, over 400 home runs in his career. Just, you know, and so at 34 years old, it was thought that, okay, he could still be, you know, maybe play outfield a few times to give people a rest, but most of the time he'd be a designated hitter. And if that's all he needed to be, then you could kind of stretch a little bit in terms of his career. And, you know, with the Royals, or as they faded down the stretch, even though it was mostly the pitching, they were, okay, if we get some more offense in here, maybe we can, you know, we won't have that drop off like we did. And similar to Kyle Zimmer, it just never materialized for the Royals and Juan Gonzalez, unfortunately.
Yeah.
He only played 33 games in the 2004 season, and he tried to give it a go in the next season. And
one game.
Didn't even play. One game.
Went 0-for-1.
That was it for him. And yes, and his career was over. He had 5 home runs for the Royals. He had 138 plate appearances. I mean, he hit 276, 326, 441. That's
reasonable.
Respectable, but, you know, not what you want out of someone that you got to kind of pick up your offense in only 33 games. So the Juan Gonzalez experiment did not, unfortunately, work out in the end, but it was a very interesting ride to get there. I mean, first, and it's funny because, you know, Mike, you did a great job, pulled together a bunch of old articles for us to look at. And, you know, we were talking about this before the show, but some of the, you know, looking back at 2003, 2004, some of the comments from some of these articles is just, it's hilarious looking back at it now with the lenses that we have, where, you know, this one line here, the thorny task of cementing last season's success while revamping a roster crammed with 15 free agents and simultaneously limiting the payroll to $45 million now seems within reach. You know, coming off the Royals, of course, who had $145 million roughly payroll last year.
Ian Kennedy,
so,
and
pretty crazy. What did
Alex Gordon and Danny Duffy pretty much clear that right now?
Yeah. And I mean, times have changed, so a lot of it is just kind of that. I mean, I'd be curious to go back and see, you know, what the total payrolls were for the higher teams in the league back then, but it was still pretty low. And then another one that from that same article that caught my eye, where they talked about In addition to Santiago and Stairs, the Royals have been linked to outfielders Juan Gonzalez, Reggie Sanders, and Raul Mondesi. Oh, fun little tidbit.
Best
obviously,
known as the
Raul
father
Mondesi
of
those
Mondesi.
Three. Yes. Raul Mondesi, of course, the only one of those three who didn't actually end up playing for the Royals, but his son did. So here we are, full circle, 15 years later. But when you look at the Juan Gonzalez era, what's your favorite?
Oh, God. What's my favorite memory? The signing of him.
Is there even a memory, I guess?
I think it was one of those things where it's like the name was really cool and the fact that they were like going for it was awesome. You know, at that time, the Royals had Mike Sweeney. They had Joe Randa. They had Carlos Beltran. They had Angel Baroa had won Rookie of the Year in 2003. David DeJesus was around. Zach Greinke was in the minors. And there was, some excitement that, okay, they kind of wound down at the end of 2003. And this was another shot. They'd went out. They signed Matt Stairs that same offseason. They brought in Benito Santiago. They got Tony Graffinino. It was pretty exciting. It looked like they were assembling all these veterans to go with the team that had almost won the division the year before. And Juan Gonzalez was a guy you could plug in right there in the middle of the lineup. I that would be pretty exciting. But looking back at all of this, it's also kind of fun to see that like there's a lot of discussion in July of 2003 about trading for Juan Gonzalez. He did have a no-trade clause. He also ran into injuries in the middle and late July. Go figure. And it didn't end up happening. The Royals ended up trading for Rondell White instead. But there was even a rumor somewhere in there, and it doesn't seem like a rumor that would have been close to coming together, but it was like Carlos Beltran for Juan Gonzalez and Michael Young, which would have been interesting. I don't know. But, I don't remember a lot about Juan Gonzalez as a Royal. One thing that definitely I recall is it took him a long time to hit his first home run, which was kind of a disappointment because it's Juan Gonzalez. You think that guy's going to hit a home run every other game. But it took him 9 games to hit his first homer as a Royal, which was, kind of disappointing. But really it came down to, the idea that he was someone who the Royals signed, one, to help their lineup, and two, symbolically to show they were going for it. So that was exciting. But, like you said, just didn't really happen. As it kind of worked out, just even from the start, like late February, he didn't report to spring training right away. There was a family issue in Puerto Rico that he had permission to stay behind for. So he got a late start there. Somewhere in about the middle of March in spring training, he had a right calf tightness, which is concerning because the injury that shut him down in 2003 that led to him not getting traded to the Royals was a right calf injury that he had surgery on. So that's no good. So then, he's healthy enough to start the year. Takes him, a week and a half to hit a home run for the Royals. He has the flu at the end of April, comes back in May. Ultimately the line's pretty good, but by the end of May, he ran into back issues. And once he started to get into, June, it was still wasn't back. Here's a rehab attempt. Nope, setback. July, he finally does start a rehab assignment. 2 weeks later, flares up again. And within a week, he had an injury to a disc in his back, and that was it. He was shut down for the year. The Royals did not pick up the mutual option for him, surprisingly. And, he ended up becoming a free agent, signed with Cleveland, played one game, and that was it. He never ended up coming back. It's kind of disappointing, actually, because he was so good at his peak. And for him to kind of just wilt away like that is kind of a bummer. But you can't say the Royals didn't try. I think he was probably the right guy for them to go after. But, it just didn't work.
I mean, because I remember, when they signed him, it was, he had the nickname Juan Gon. It was the it felt not quite the same because it's a different sport and everything, but similar to, you know, when the Royals – I'm sorry, when Chiefs traded for an aging Joe Montana, you know, he came in and took him to an AFC championship game, you know, proved he had something left in the tank. So it kind of felt like, hey, maybe that same type of thing can happen. Maybe, you know, maybe not MVP type of year, but it hits, you know, 25 home runs and hits, you know, has a 850 OPS or something like that, you know, then he can really help out this team. But yeah, it just, none of that even came close to materializing. And it truly is unfortunate because it was a, you know, I mean, he was 34 years old, but that's not super old. I guess, you know, back then, even things were a little bit different. But I mean, David Ortiz had a MVP type season at that age as a designated hitter. So, you know, it's, you've seen players get, you know, still have good numbers at that age. And he certainly thought that he could be a good candidate to have something like that, given so much talent. But yeah, it just, the back injuries and, or the, just the, all the injuries and just everything else turned out that, unfortunately, the Juan Gonzalez era, we hardly knew ye.
Last there, of the month.
There it was.
Yeah, that whole year was pretty bad. It was, Mike Sweeney had a lot of his back issues started in that year. Joe Randa was hurt. Michael Tucker was coming off of some injuries. Just not good. Jose Lima wasn't good that season, and he got hurt a couple times, I think. Yeah, it was a rough year. And they lost 104 games or something? Real bad. Mm-hmm. Real bad. So, yeah, that one season sticks out like a sore thumb of 2003 where they finished over 500, and it's sandwiched between a bunch of 100 loss seasons. I think Aaron Guile was on that 2004 team where he kind of started to, you know, get a following and get pretty good. But yeah, nothing really worked out very well. And later that year, they traded Carlos Beltran. So banner year, great season for Royals baseball. Yeah.
Yay. Yeah.
I was thinking about this, though, weirdly enough, like, this is a weird counterfactual that would obviously never have happened. But let's say they trade Carlos Beltran for Juan Gonzalez, and they are able to win a division in 2003. And then, well, then they don't have Beltran to trade to get Mark Tien, and then they can't trade Tien to get Chris Getz, and then Chris Getz isn't there to block Johnny Giavitella. And what if Johnny Giavitella becomes the Dustin Pedroia of the 2015 Royals, which means they don't need to get Ben Zobrist, which means that Sean Manaea, who we forgot about earlier, would be your opening day yes. starter this season.
After having thrown a no-hitter,
yeah. Obviously, none of that can happen. What would have happened was they would have traded Juan Gonzalez.
Nothing matters now.
And not won the division. And, well, everything else that followed probably would have happened.
Then if it ended up being that deal you talked about, Juan Gonzalez and Michael Young, then they'd have that Michael Young thrown into the equation.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Well.
That's true.
I'm surprised
they never signed Michael Young later in his career. He was a very much a Royals-type player. Like
very
second
much.
And third base, high contact, veteran, gritty kind of dude. Yeah, I'm shocked that never happened, and it just didn't. It just never happened.
No. Seemed like an inevitable one, but even best laid plans.
Right. Right.
So, anyway, thought that was a little fun trip down memory lane there.
Yeah.
For,
always fun to remember 2004. Royals.
Yes, one of those shining years in Royals franchise history, which of course started the three consecutive 100 loss seasons, which they then avoided doing again until last year. But that's okay.
World Series in that time. So that's
they
fine.
Won, yep. The grace period is still not worn off for the. I always say, when a team wins a championship, they get a 5-year grace period.
They're getting close though.
What?
They won
They're getting
the
close.
5 years
getting
ago
close.
This season, so
that's
which
true.
Is weird. It doesn't seem like it's that soon yet, but it is.
It doesn't, right? Oh, man, that team seems so
really
far away
do.
Now.
It's
just thinking about all those guys.
It's very weird. Brandon Finnegan and
Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, and all the rest.
James Shields, Kane. Billy Butler.
Jeez. Gerard Dyson. Well, but hey, the Kansas City Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes, who is maybe the best quarterback in the league right now.
I'd go with that, and I'm not even like a Chiefs fan, really.
And could be for the next 10 to 15 years or so. So this this coming weekend when they play the Patriots, it could be if the Chiefs pull out a victory, it could be a passing of the torch from Tom Brady to Patrick Mahomes. I'm excited. I don't know, but so if you're down about the Royals, hopefully you're also a Chiefs fan because it's a good time.
It is, even though everybody's worried and freaking out, which I get.
Yes, but such as the case.
I mean,
yes.
There's one. It's a big game. Two. It's Kansas City. Three. It's the Chiefs have many more demons than the Royals do. I don't know. I feel good about them, but I was actually
talking about this with my wife. And I was like, okay, so you're the same as me. You don't really root for the Chiefs. You're not as much of a football guy as I am. But
when they do well, you know, I'm Chiefs happy Royals when they Chiefs do well, and I root for them when
they're
in position.
But it's not like you're some huge fan of another football team. You're just football's just not my, as much
not
of a
my
thing.
Thing.
For you.
It's a vehicle for me to lose money in fantasy. Yeah. That's it.
There you go. Which is fine.
I'm really good
but,
at that.
So yeah, there you go. I am, but you know, Chiefs, Royals, Jayhawks. That's who I root for.
God, why do you still watch sports?
Right? Because I was telling Jackie, I was telling my wife, I was like, okay, well, with the Royals, you know, they were so bad, it was never anything to even think that they should be competing or whatever. So it wasn't heartbreak.
You expect nothing.
Exactly. There was no disappointment. It was just 30 years of awfulness, and then all of a sudden, hey, they're good, and they won a World Series, and then now we're back to where we were. So that's kind of just what happened. So it never got to be – you could maybe make an argument that 2016 and 17 were slightly disappointing.
Yeah.
But it still wasn't even near on the level of you know, other teams. And then – KU, yeah, there have been some pretty big disappointments with losing to, you know, Bradley and Bucknell, losing to Northern Iowa, losing to VCU in the Elite Eight, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, I have reason to get my hopes up because they have punched through. You know, they've made five Final Fours in the last 20 years, and they won a national championship. I've seen it happen, right? And then with the Royals, of course, even though I didn't expect much, I still saw it happen. They punched through, they took advantage, they won the World Series. Boom. They got there twice and then won it. So, but the Chiefs have never given me anything in either way. They've had a couple seasons where they've been just absolutely terrible, but not sustained. You know, they've always been somewhat relevant to the scene. They've been in the playoff hunt or in the actual playoffs. I mean, and then they, but they haven't punched through, and it's been gut punch loss after gut punch loss, and just so frustrating and so tired of it. And I was so nervous before Saturday. I'm just like, before I left for the game, I'm just pacing around the house. I don't know what to do. I'm sitting there in the car waiting to go in, and I just, it's a mess. But so who knows? It's looking like it's going to be an exciting game. Yeah. This weekend, and if they are able to get it done, then hey, this would be. But the Chiefs have consistently been the most disappointing franchise I root for. That sounds bad to say it that way, but it's true, because you know, even though there's been some disappointment with KU, it's tempered by the fact that they have pushed through and they have won it all. And the Royals, they rewarded us for sticking with them through all those terrible years by winning it all. But the Chiefs have never done that. So hopefully, you know, maybe this is the year. You never know. Just like the Royals have shown, you never know. But anyway, so that was your uplifting,
your tortured Casey moment
to leave the show. Yes, if you will. More story time, right? But that's all we have. Is there anything else you wanted to cover? I think we've hit everything that we talked
the
about.
The only other kind of stuff, or just like some roster stuff, there were a bunch of players invited to spring training, like Bubba Starling, Michael Enoa, Foster Griffin, MJ Melendez, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of other guys. You know, nobody who Richard Lovelady is probably the most likely to maybe push for a roster spot. You know, it's going to be something to watch. Chesler Cuthbert was designated for assignment when the Royals signed Kyle Zimmer, but he cleared and was outrighted to Omaha, so he's going to stay in the organization. No idea if you're going to see a lot of him. Last year was pretty much lost. And Erik Skoglund was suspended for 80 games today using a couple of PEDs. I think it's another one of those. I didn't realize that they were in the thing I took kind of scenarios. But
yes, 2 hours before we recorded that came out, I almost forgot.
Which is a bummer for him because, you know, it would have been a year of opportunity for him. He pitched okay at times last year and not that okay at times. But looked like someone who might get a look at as a fifth starter candidate or maybe out of the bullpen. But, yeah, he's going to miss half the season now, and that's going to really limit his opportunities. So, you know, that's too bad for him. Hopefully it was accidental, but I don't know. I'm pretty skeptical on the accidental taking of
supplements. I rarely ever actually buy that it's accidental. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, sometimes the stories where they talk about, oh, it was this cough syrup
that was Mondesi's, which
prescribed.
Maybe but
whether it's, I believe it or not, it's actually a reasonable story.
Yeah.
But just like, oh, I took this supplement and I didn't know it was illegal.
You've got a $1 billion.
I'm not buying that.
Organization with trainers and all that, you can make a phone call and ask somebody.
Yes, people that are paid to make that assessment for you, so you don't have to be in this situation and you ignore it. So you're either dumb enough to deserve, I hate to speak that,
it's a negligence.
Or you did it intentionally. Yeah. So I tend to believe most of these people did it intentionally. So, but anyway, you know, is what it is.
Yep. He's going to miss 80 games. So
hope it was worth it.
I guess we'll see in 80 games. I don't. It's too bad, but there it goes. Indeed. So, that's about it.
All right. So with that, I think we'll end the show. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks. Hopefully we got more news, something to talk about. I mean, even, you know, we were talking about this before the show, even besides just the Royals, baseball in general has not done anything. Bryce Harper's still out there. Manny Machado's still out there. All these free agents are just sitting out there and hardly anybody has signed at all. And, it's been just a really weak, unfun. I mean, maybe this is, again, we're talking, maybe this is the new normal, at least until they get a new CBA, but it's not, it's been pretty uneventful so far in the off season. So hopefully we'll have something, even if it's just something in baseball in general to talk about. But we'll see, I guess. So until then, we'll be back again in 2 weeks for another show. So until then, thank you all so much for stopping by. We'll see you next week. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can find us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Facebook under the title Kansas City Baseball Vault. And be sure to check us out on iTunes. If you haven't subscribed already, you can find us there as, you guessed it, Kansas City Baseball Vault. If you have any comments, questions, if you want to say anything, it's a free country. Email us at KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.